The last time that we spoke, the country that was the biggest power in the world was Parasamadai. Parasamadai, as we explained, we had before Parasamadai, we had Bavel, then Parasamadai. It's more or less the area that you have today of Iraq and Iran. So the control of the world went a little bit from the east, which is today Iraq, moved a little bit towards went from the west a little bit towards the east, towards Iran, which is Parasamadai, and that was the country that basically was in control of the world. There was something that happened in world history that changed that situation, and basically what it was is that the people living in Greece, the two main cities that you had in Greece at that time were Athens and Sparta. So they caused a revolution. They revolted against the control of Parasamadai. And there's a whole big story about how they did it. It was a combination, basically, of two things that the Malchus, so to say. It wasn't really a Malchus in Greece, because Athens was more or less a democracy. But the Kayach, the Greeks, developed their army and the Ika, their navy. And also it also had to do with the fact that in Parasamadai, the Malchus in Parasamadai got weaker. The combination of these two things made it so that ultimately they were able to throw off the yoke of the Persians. The Persians, for all of the rest of the people in the world, weren't very good rulers. They weren't very friendly. And so when the Greeks went to brought about the revolution against the Persians, so there were other countries who were willing to go along with them in order to throw off the yoke of the Persian government. We know a little bit about Sparta. Sparta was a city where all of its male citizens grew up as soldiers and spend their time in military camps. The children were taken away at a very young age, and they were taught to be soldiers. The in the city of Athens, it was very, very different. There were craftsmen, merchants, and sailors, and they also were busy with the arts and the sciences and philosophy, music, and all different types of let's call it modern type of educational pursuits. And also they developed a democracy in their country. So once again, they battled against the Persians in the many, many famous different battles. Little by little, more or less, they were able to succeed in throwing off the Persian yoke from them. But in the process of throwing off the yoke from them, of the Persians, they weakened up their own government. And as a result, and also it had to do with internal struggles that took place between the different cities that you had in Greece itself. So as a result, from the north of Greece, in a city called Macedonia, the king, whose name was Philip, went south into Greece and took control over the whole area, all of Greece. So now we have the country of Greece that had all of these famous philosophers, as we mentioned, and we studied where these people came from, ultimately where the Chochmah came from. But once again, they came down into Greece, and they took control of the country of Greece. And all of Greece and Macedonia were now under the control of Philip of Macedonia. Now, Philip was successful mainly because he had a very, very powerful army. Philip's son was a person whose name was Alexander. known to us as Alexander the Great. He was known as Alexander the Great because, without a doubt, he was a brilliant general. And his father died at a young age, and Alexander took over the reins from his father. His father, before he died, gave to Alexander Aristotle, who was the biggest chacham from Athens, to be his teacher. And then the tradition has it that as Alexander went from country to country to conquer the known world at that time, he always took along with him Aristotle. Aristotle, his teacher, he didn't go any place without taking along Aristotle with him. So, little by little, after the after Alexander took control of these of Greece, he decided that he wanted basically to rule over the whole world. And so, from Greece, he traveled east. And as you could see, and mainly where he wanted to go was he wanted to go into Paros of Madai, in what today would be Persia, Iran, Iraq, into that area. They were the second most powerful countries in the world after the Greeks took control of Persia, but they were still a major power in the world. So he wanted to go into many different countries, and ultimately he wanted to conquer the lands that were east. He wanted to take control of what was left of the Persian Empire, and to bring about the end of the Persian Empire. In order for him to do this, and once again, as he mentioned, he was a brilliant general, and he was able, using his tremendous chokhmah as a general, he was able to go from country to country and to be able to conquer one after the other. His army, Memela, was able to grow bigger and bigger with the different countries that he conquered, and he had his eye on moving in to Persia. In order to get into Persia, so he had to go through Eretz Yisrael, because if you look on the map, when you take your ship and you go and you want to go into Persia, so you land your ship on the port of the Mediterranean, and on the port of the Mediterranean is where Eretz Yisrael is. So he went to Eretz Yisrael, and from there to move his way east in order to conquer Persia. Now, and that was his kavana. His kavana was that he should be able to go through Eretz Yisrael. And as I mentioned, as he went into different countries, so he took along with him the people that he conquered. Ultimately, they joined up with his army, and they joined up with him and continued on his campaign to conquer the rest of the world. When he came into Eretz Yisrael, so he had the same idea. He figured that he's going to come into Eretz Yisrael, and the people living in Eretz Yisrael, the Eden living in Eretz Yisrael, would join him, join his army, and set out in order to conquer Persia. What he found is that the Eden refused to join him in his battle. And the reason for this is because the Eden had made a promise to the king of Persia at that time that they would remain loyal to him. And being that they promised that they would remain loyal, so even though it was very obvious that Alexander was going to conquer Persia because he had a better army, and also, and this is very, very interesting and important for us, the Eden always knew that in a very short amount of time, the Persian Empire would be overthrown by the Greeks, because they had this benevuah. This was in the nevuah of Daniel. We always knew that that there were different koiches, the golosin that we had to go through. We knew about the different kings that were going to conquer the world. So we knew, this was very clear to us, that ultimately Yavon was going to take control of the world. And here we have Yavon with this great general that's taking over one country after the other. So, and they knew it had been a vua that he would be successful. we would assume that the thing to do would be to join him. But the Yidden had promised the king in Persia, and don't forget there was the Indian of Hakaras HaTaif also, after all the Melech in Persia helped them in order to build the Beis HaMikdash. So they refused to go against their word, and they refused to help Alexander in conquering conquering in Persia. Now we mentioned that in Eretz Yisrael at that time were found the Kusim. And the Kusim, if you remember, the Kusim were from a different country who, after the Aseres HaShvatim went into Golus, so Melech Ashur brought these people into Eretz Yisrael because he didn't want that Eretz Yisrael should be left desolate. So therefore he brought these people, the Kusim, into Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara tells over that what happened was, living in Eretz Yisrael, they were attacked by lions. They realized that they were living in a country that wasn't willing to tolerate them because they were Goyim, and therefore they were Magayer, and there's a suffix in the Gemara of the Geri Arois or Geri Emes. But also at the same time we learned that Nehemiah, these are from the people, from the Takonas that Nehemiah made, that he turned the Kusim for all practical purposes into Goyim, because Nehemiah said that if somebody eats paskusi, kilu ochal basar chazir. So if azoy the kusim were, they couldn't be megayer, they couldn't be even accepted as gerim in klal Yisrael. So they were ostracized from ever being able to become a chelik of klal Yisrael. And the kusim therefore were always a thorn in our side. We're going to learn more about the kusim as we go along. But they were always there to make trouble. Basically, they claimed to be one of us when it was useful for them to be one of us. And then when being one of us wasn't such a good idea for them, so then they said they weren't one of us and they're somebody different. When they saw how powerful Alexander was, and they saw also that the Eden were not going with Alexander, and they realized that Alexander would be successful, so they went to Alexander. And when they came to Alexander, they told Alexander that they're not Yidden, they're Kusim, and they are the ones who belong in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they convinced Alexander, and they told Alexander, they said, you see, the Yidden, we're willing to go with you into battle. The Jews, they're not willing to go with you into battle, so destroy their Beis HaMikdash, and build for us the Beis HaMikdash. We're the Emes Yidden. We're the ones who deserve a Beis HaMikdash. They were in Hagrizim. Build for us, give us permission to build a Beis HaMikdash in Hagrizim. We will be in control of Eretz Yisrael. And in the meantime, destroy the Beis HaMikdash that the Yidden had. And that way, you will have control over, through us, you'll have control over Eretz Yisrael. And we're more than happy to join you in the battle against the Persians. So now, this brought about a terrible situation in Eretz Yisrael, because here you have Alexander the Great, who is the most powerful king. He's now angry at the Eden for not joining him in his battles, and he's being antagonized by the Kusim. So what should Klal Yisrael do? Now this is the Gemara in Yuma that I gave you, Daf Samach Tes Amar Aleph. And you see, I underlined it in the Gemara. Now, this is Nagar to the Sugya about Bigde Kuhuna going outside of Eretz Yisrael, which is not our Indian, but Ustafe, Vatanya. See where it says Vatanya. The Esra of the Chamisha Betevis Yoim Har Gerizim Hu. Le Mispid, that you're not allowed to say Esra, it's a Yoim of Simcha. Why is it a Yoim of Simcha? Yoim Shebikshu Kusiyim Es Beis Elekeinim Alexandris Mugdim, Lahachrivay. Because this was the day that the Kusim wanted Alexander Mugdom to be Machriv the Beis HaMikdash, Benosnu Lahem. Benos, and you see the gears on the side, Benosam Lahem Rishus, and he gave them permission. They can pull down the Beis HaMikdash. So now, the question was, what should the Eden do? Vahidi was Shimon HaTzadik. They told Shimon HaTzadik over the problem. Now, Shimon HaTzadik will learn more soon about who Shimon HaTzadik was, but once again, as we mentioned before, the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says Shimon HaTzadik Hoyim Yishiyorei Anshei Knesses HaGdoilom, and Shimon HaTzadik is the one who tells us Al Shloish HaDvarim HaOilom Oimed Al HaTorah V'Al Voidah Gemilas Chasodim. And what we need to understand is that we don't have another Tana that has this title given to him, Tzadik. You know, I guess we're pretty free with the titles, and everybody can be a Tzadik. But in the Gemara and the Mishnayos, we don't have the title of Tzadik being given freely to anybody. And yet, this title is being given to this person who was the Kohen Gadol, whose name was Shimon, and he goes down in history for Doiri Doiris as being Shimon with the title of Tzadik. And Pashtus, the reason is because being that he was the one that taught us that the Ikrim are Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasodim, which of course are the Ikrim, it's not just that he taught it, but this is what he practiced. He was outstanding in Torah, outstanding in Avodah, outstanding in Gemilas Chasodim, and in Mela, he was worthy to gain this title of Shimon HaTzadik. So here we have this person, this outstanding Tzadik, who was at the time either the Kohen Gadol, or he was destined to become the Kohen Gadol. So what did Shimon HaTzadik do? Lavash Bigdei Kohuna. He put on Bigdei Kohuna, v'nis'atef v'bigdei Kohuna, umikri, umikire Yisrael imai. He took along the important people of Klal Yisrael, and the Gemara says that he took torches and he marched throughout the night, just as the Alexander and his army was marching towards Yerushalayim to destroy Yerushalayim. So he was marching towards Alexander together with his people till Atsha'ala Olo Abud HaShachar, and until it became morning. Kivan Sha'ola Amud HaShachar Omalehem Mi'alolu. Alexander saw these people coming, and he said, who are these people? So they told him, Amru La Yehudim Shemar Dubach. He said, these are the Jews that are revolting against you. Kivan Shehigia La Antrupus. This is a city, Zor Chachama Upaku Zemize. Kivan Shira Shimon HaTzadik. So now Alexander sees Shimon HaTzadik. Yorad Meimer Kavtei. He got off of his chariot, V'hishtachev Elefonav, and he bowed down before him. Now, this is a very almost a demoralizing situation for the soldiers and the generals of his army, because here you have this great leader of theirs who is in the process of conquering the world, and he's faced with a person, as far as they're concerned, a regular person, not a powerful general, not a powerful king. I mean, and in their world, who could he be already? If he's not a successful soldier, so who could he be already? And here, this Alexander gets off of his chariot, v'hishtachev elefonav, and he bows down in front of him. So the soldiers in their turmoil say to him, Amru loy melach gadol kamaischa yishtachev el Yehudi zeh. A great king like you is going to bow down to this Jew? You know, those are the two extremes. Yeah? Melech and Yehudi, those are the two extremes, right? So how could it be? So he told them something which was very startling to all of them. Amalehem, the most yuknei shel zeh, minatzeches lefonai, bebeis milchamosi. That this Yid, when he comes, and this Mefarshim explain, that this the most yuknei shel zeh, this the image of Shimon HaTzadik, he comes to me before I go into battle. So he encourages him to go further, and he tells him that he's going to win. That's the demus of Shimon HaTzadik. So he says, "What do you mean? Who is he?" He somehow seems to be the reason that I'm successful, because he comes in a cholum, or he comes in an image and in a vision, and he says, "I'm going to be successful." Now let's remember this in the context that we're studying this. Shimon, Alexander the Great goes with his teacher. His teacher is Aristotle. Aristotle is the Greek philosopher. As we mentioned, Aristotle does not believe in anything ruchniistic. Aristotle, the whole basis of Greek culture is the fact that there is no lamala min ateva. Everything is in the physical world. Everything is in the gashmiistic world. So that means that if you have a cholam, and in this cholam you see Mara Nevua, so what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to turn over on the other side and go back to sleep. Because as far as Alexander Mugdam is concerned, there is no such thing. It's impossible that there be such a thing. If you have a cholam, and in this cholam you see that if last night when you went to sleep, you dreamt that this morning the bagels are going to arrive late, so there's two ways of looking at this. Either psa cholam epis is something that's important, or else you could look at it that it was by chance it was that way. You know, sometimes the breakfast comes late and sometimes it doesn't, so you had it, well, shine, okay, big deal. So you push it aside. But what happens if every single time that you have such a cholam, in fact it works out to be that way? So you start wondering. So till now, Alexander had this cholam, and he had it again and again, but he figured, he didn't know who this person was that he saw in his cholam, so for some reason he figured that the night before he goes to battle, he dreams about such a person, but the dream is meaningless because the person was meaningless. He had no idea, he didn't associate this person with any real person, he never met Shimon HaTzadik before, so it was meaningless to him. But now, all of a sudden, he comes across Shimon HaTzadik, and he sees that this is the person that comes to him in the vision before he goes to battle. So can you imagine what this did to Alexander the Great? Once again, star student of Aristotle, that he begins to realize that there's something else going on in this world besides the fact that if you're a successful general. So he always thought the reason he's a successful general is because he knows strategy, he knows this, he knows that, he knows how to pull together his soldiers, whatever it is. Maybe there's a little bit of luck thrown in there. Abasiyata deshraya, hashgacha protis. In his world, this did not exist. And all of a sudden, this is a tremendous eye-opener to him. Here's the person who's not a soldier. He's by the Eden, is a holy person. He's a Ish Kaddish. And he is the one that appears to him in his cholam. So there is something to the cholams. There is something out there besides his strategy. He also begins to realize, and we'll soon see that that Alexander was a thinking man. He also begins to realize that why was he so successful? He thought that he was so successful because of his kayach, of his power. But now he sees that his success has something to do with the Eden. Someplace, somehow, there is an encouragement, so to say, that comes from the head of the Eden. And it's even a spiritual kind of an encouragement that comes to Kumtana Chaloyim, you know, that he's the one that somehow is whether he wants to admit it or not, is part of the reason that he's so successful in his battles. Is there Shimon HaTzadik, Psakayin Godel, Psanish Kodesh? So his Atzloch has something to do with Klal Yisrael also. So these are tremendous eye-openers for him. Amalehem, so he says to the Eden, Lama Bosem, so he says to him, what are you doing here? And I wouldn't want to put in over here that when they, maybe Alexander questioned them, why didn't you come with me when I was, now that I'm successful, that I won already, so now you're coming, why didn't you come with me before? So they must have explained that we didn't come to you before because we had promised the king that we weren't going to go, and we are people of our word. And I would assume that was something that was, now that Alexander was successful without them, that maybe he looked at it as being something that was showed that these are type of people, they're very loyal people. So in other words, they're men of their word. So it's a mila. Again, now that he's won, so he sees that these are people that have strength of character, that even though they knew that Alexander was going to be Menatzeach, but they gave the word and they wouldn't go back on the word. So these are people who have strength of character. Amru, the Eden said, Efshe bayis shebispalum bayolecha v'almalchuscha shalaytichorev. is it possible to say that this Malchus that was mispal for you, that you should be successful, that you should be successful, so you're going to come and you're going to destroy them? How could it be such a thing? Now, what does it mean that they were mispal? Probably what they meant was, is because we knew this from the Nevuah. We know from the Nevuah that you are going to be successful. So the fact that you're being successful, you're not going against us. We're more than willing to accept you because we know that this is what's going to happen. Alexander says to them, Amalehem mihalolu. Now Alexander turns to the Eden and says, but who are these other people? These other people, they claim to be Jews and they're willing to go with us. So they told them, Amrulai kusim halolu. These are kusim. They're not one of us. These are kusim. Amalehem harehem besurim biyadechem. He said, the kusim are put into your hands, and the Yidden were able to, at this point anyway, to put the kusim into their place. So the kusim weren't able to build themselves a base of Mikdash. If anything, they were put into their place. As a result of this ma'aseh, they were put into their place. And in the end of the Gemara, it says, "V'oisei hayoyim asu yontif." And that day, they made it into a yontif. And we also know that there was, as a result of this ma'aseh, as hakoras hatoiv, so the Eden made a gzeira that for that year, any child that's going to be born will be given the name Alexander. To commemorate the story that took place, the nest that took place with Alexander the Great, so they were given the name Alexander. And you know how it is, once a name is put into Klal Yisrael, the name remains. So Ad Hayom, you have people who are called Alexander, because, not after Alexander the Great, but because the Zaydat Geis and Alexander, and the reason the Zaydat Geis and Alexander, because Zayn Zaydat Geis and Alexander, because you go all the way back, there was the name Alexander is now incorporated somehow into Klal Yisrael. So this is the Maisa that the Gemara brings down of how Alexander was stopped by Shimon HaTzadik from being able to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And that day, therefore, was made into a yontif. Now, before we go weiter, I want to also go through a little bit the Gemara in Tamid. Again, that we should be able to see a little bit of the interaction, so to say, between Alexander and the Yidden. And this is the Gemara that you have in front of you, the Gemara in Tamid Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, and goes until Lamed Beis Amud Beis. And the Gemara talks about how Alexander went in order to find out different things. He was very inquisitive. He was a person, Taka, that wanted to know the Emes. And he went to ask all kinds of shilas. So I didn't give you the couple of words from the Amud Beis before, but the Gemara before says, Asara Dvorim Shol Alexandra's Mugdim Ezikmei HaNegev. There were 10 things that Alexander Mugdim asked Ziknei HaNegev. Now, Ziknei HaNegev, Pashtus refers to the people in the south. Now, the Negev is in the south. And you'll see that the Ziknei Negev at this point refers to to Goyim. Now, I don't know who they were. However, Greece is in the south of Macedonia. So perhaps that's what it means. That he went to the Chachomim of Greece and he asked them all of these, shilas. And the first shiloh that he asked was, we have over here at top of the omit, Min Hashemayim la'aretz rochoik or min Mizrach la'marv. Which is further, from Shemayim to Aretz or from Mizrach to Marv? Now, we can understand this Gemara in one of two ways. We can understand the Gemara, that the Gemara is asking a physical question, which way is further? And in the Mefarish that you have in Tomin, as is Mashma, it doesn't seem any different. The Maral on this Gemara says that that's about not the Pshat in the Gemara, but he was asking a very deep philosophical question, and the Maral goes on to explain what the question is. What we're going to do, what we're going to take from this Gemara is, whether he was asking a scientific question, or whether he was asking a very deep philosophical question, but these Chachomim, they gave them an answer. They figured out an answer from. And afterwards, the Gemara says, if you look about five lines to the top of the Amud, it says, "V'chachamim maimrim, zev zeh ke'echad shavim," that they're both equal. Shenemar kegvaya hashemayim al haaretz. And what strikes us right away is that the Chachamim, these Chachamim from the Negev, they use their reasoning in order to answer Alexander. And the Chachamim, when they had to answer him, they brought a raya from a pasuk. And Rabbi Yisai, here we have, in essence, the nafkamina between us. If we had to put down into two words the difference between us and the Greeks, here you have it. When you ask the Greeks a question, so they're going to sit and they're going to think. And think and think and try to rationalize and figure out, philosophize, whether if it's a scientific question that was asked, that's being asked, like the pashtus of the Gemara, so they're going to try to figure it out. And if it's a philosophical question that they're asking, so then they're going to stare up into the skies and they're going to think and think and think and try to figure out what the answer is in a philosophical way. But whatever way it is, they're going to try to figure it out by themselves. And if you go to the Chachamim and you ask them the question, so the answer is Shaita Pasuk. The Pasuk is Kigvaya Shemayim Al Horetz, and you bring a raya from the Pasuk. That's the way we even do it. And the Gemara asks the question, you bring a raya from the Pasuk, aye, there's a kasha, so the Gemara gives the teretz. But Kaidim Shaita HaPasuk. And that, in essence, once again, is the chilik between us and the Greeks. We have a Messiah, the Messiah is the Torah. And whether we understand it or whether we don't understand it, it's not negeya to us. I mean, it's negeya that if we don't understand it, we're going to look for pshat, that we're going to try to figure it out, how to explain it, and so forth and so on. And if a person does it, so then it's avada madregis and limud haTorah. But if you want to know benegeya to the abitus advarim boshtet and the posik, thus is the emes, and that's it. And if, let's say, I can't explain it, so maybe I can't explain it. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the teretz lit in the posik. Now, Shane Kane, the Greeks, when you go to them and you ask them the question, so they have a whole different approach to the question. And this is something, obviously, again, that startled Alexander. A contrast between what he was learning from Aristotle and what he's hearing from the Chacham. Then the Gemara goes on, the next thing that I underline for you, and we'll see again something interesting. He asked him a question. Shemayim nivra tchila ay ha'aretz. He asked him which was, he went to the Chachamim, and he asked the Chachamim, I guess he was satisfied with the answer they gave before, so now he asked him another question. He said, what was created first? Was Shemayim created first, or was the earth created first? So they told him, Shemayim nivra tchila shenemar bereishis bar lekim es ha-shemayim v'yes ha-aretz. And of course the Magiim right away in Ma'ir, it's Machloikis v'sharim v'silo, this Gemara seems to be going like v'shamay, but again, that's not our issue. The issue that we are going to take note of is the fact that he answered them with a pasuk. Then the Gemara goes further and the Gemara says he asked them another question. What was created first? Or nivra tchila eichayshich? Was light created first, or was darkness created first? So they told him, to this question, they told him, we don't know the answer. We don't know, omrei milsa dor ein lo peser. We don't know the answer to this. So the Gemara asked the Kasha, why did they say they don't know an answer to this? They should have said that Choshech was created first, because it says in the Pasuk, v'ha'aretz ha'isa soyu v'voyu v'choshech. So he should have answered right there with the Pasuk. In the Pasuk it's mashma that Choshech was created first, so he should have answered them with the Pasuk. So why didn't they answer this? So the Gemara says they didn't want to answer this. Savri, Dilma Osi Lishule, Mala 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 Mata Malifnir Mala Ochar, because they were afraid if a Krichtereine Maisa Bereshis. He's asking questions about Maisa Bereshis. And then he's going to ask, and what was before the first day? And what goes on top of Shamayim? And what goes on under the Oretz? This is Maisa Bereishis, Maisa Merkava, and Maisa Bereishis. And they didn't want to get involved in a discussion with them, because the answer to all of these questions for us, for the simple Yidden like us, is that we don't have shaychus to Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava. surely for this goy, that's the answer. It's not a gear for you to kriech rein in this. But they knew that with Alexander, they're not going to be able to get away with such an answer. So therefore they said, we don't know. And end of discussion. So the Gemara is the Kasha, Yehochi, Shemayim, Nami, Leinemer, Leitz. How come they told him that Shemayim was created before Oretz? So the Gemara explains. The Gemara says, first we thought that Stam, he's asking me one Shiloh. So they answered him. But when they see, when they realize that Alexander is going to ask all kinds of questions when they get out to my Sibiratius, say they were afraid to get into a discussion with him, and therefore they decided that they're not going to answer. They're going to cut down the discussion over here. They're not going to answer him because ultimately they're going to have to tell him that we don't want to tell you, we don't want to answer you. It's Zishlan Geschäft, this is my Sibiratius, my Simarkov, it's not your Geschäft, and that's not going to be good. So they told him for here, and now they told him, listen, we don't want to tell you. Now, on one hand, we see that Alexander Taka was a very inquisitive person. He was a person, Taka, that was searching for the Emes. I want to point out a very interesting Zach, at least very interesting, I think that should be very interesting to everybody, that the Yavitz on this Gemara, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and the Hagois on the Gemara, asked a question. He says, he asked them a question, what was created first, Shemayim or Oretz? So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that Alexander Mugdim's Rebbe was Aristotle, and Aristotle believed that the world was Mugdam. Now what this means is Aristotle believed that the world was always in existence. I can't explain it because I don't think he could have explained, been able to explain it. You want to know how many years ago was the world created? Alexander believed that the world was always in existence. Okay? Ha'olam is Kadmon, that the world was always in existence. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden asked the Kasha that how could it be that he answered him that the how could Alexander ask a question which was created first, Shemayim or Oretz? According to Aristotle, they're both there forever. So what did he mean with the Kasha? Asugis HaGemara, HaGemara with the Kasha, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a Kasha on the Gemara. That's the Kasha that he asks on the Gemara. Very interesting. This is the way he puts down the Kasha. He says, "In time Alexander's mehechin yada legami bibriya shemayim v'aretz. How bechlal do you know that the world was created? Halay Rabbi Hoya machish habriya. His Rebbe Aristotle was machish the whole thing that the world was created. So the only way he knew it was from the Torah. So if he knew it from the Torah, so he knew the pasuk. Say, what's he asking?" So Rabbi Isai, I'm going to fill you in on something else which is very startling to me, because when I went over the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, so there's a Haggah here from this Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and what's very important is, you know, the big Shulchan Aruch, the big Gemaras that we have in the yeshiva, where you have all of the Mefarshim in the back put together, do you know what I mean? All these little Svarim of Mefarshim that you have in the back, and the big Shas that we have in the Beis Medrash. So they put them all on the daf. You take a look. You don't have separate the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, but you have all together, each daf, and you have a few of the Mefarshim put together. In that Gemara, in that Shas, they take out, for some reason, they take out the next few lines in this Haggah from Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Over here, the way we have it in the old Gemaras, in other words, the Gemara we have like this, there's a bracket. And in the bracket, it's sort of like this, Amar HaKosaf. Akaisif, the writer writes. So I have no idea who this is. Okay? I have no idea who this is. He says, Dvar of Tamuim. He doesn't understand Rabbi Yaakov Emden's Kasha. Ki be'em is Rabbi Laizik Nosei Chaza Mishitosei. Because his Rebbe, Aristotle, when he got older, was Chaser from his Shita, Behemi Bechidish Oilam, Umeyata Emokam Nekushiyose. So this person, whoever he is who wrote this, said that he doesn't understand Rabbi Yaakov Emden's question, because when Aristotle got older, so he was chayzer from his shita that the world was always in existence, and he believed that the world was created. That's what he says. Now what he's referring to is something that is brought down in some of the Sfarim, and in this Sfarim it says as follows, that there is a tradition that said over that Aristotle, when he got older, changed his mind. It had to do with the fact that Aristotle came in contact with Shimon HaTzadik, and he changed his mind. He realized the emes, and therefore he changed his mind from all of the basic philosophical issues that he had, and he was moided to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Bayrei Shemayim Va'aretz. Now, the truth of the matter is, as far as I know, and I may be wrong, but as far as I know, I don't know if we can accept this as historical fact. And I think we've discussed this once before. There is such a thing as factual things, things that we know for sure, that's the way they are. And then there are certain traditions that are found in the traditions that are found in, they could be in Yiddish books, they could be found in Goyish books. If it's something that's brought down as fact from the Rishonim, then of course we know, dos is es. If it's brought down as fact in the Gemara, then we know that dos is es. But I don't know of any Rishon that brings it down as fact, or any place where it discusses this. There are places where it's brought down that there was such a rumor, so to say, that such a thing was in existence. But I have yet to see that it should be accepted by anybody as pure fact. Okay? Therefore, I would assume that Rabbi Yaakov Emden also didn't accept it as fact, and that's the reason why he asked this kasha. This magia, whoever this magia was, used this tradition in order to use it as a teretz. This is his teretz to the kasha, that Aristotle, the Seif Yomav, he was chayzer, and he taught it over to Aristotle also, and that's the reason why. Now Aristotle believed in the Bari Olam, so that's why he's going to ask these questions. Now, if we look further on in the Gemara, so we could be impressed even a bit by the inquisitive mind of Aristotle. The next Gemara by underlined, he said, Ezeo Chacham. He said to him, who is considered a Chacham? So they answered him, Haraya is Hanailit. Now, sounds familiar. Perkei Avos. Amalehem, Eden Miskari Gibor, are you considered Giborim? Amrulay Ezeo Gibor, Hakaibish Es Yitzchai. Amalehem, Eden Miskari Ashir, are you, what is considered an Ashir? Amrulay Ezeo Ashir, Hasameach Bechalkai. So, what he was teaching him was something which is to us very basic. In the world, there's such a thing as a Chacham, a Gibor, and an Ashir. And in our world, there's also such a thing as a Chacham and a Gibor and an Asher. But our dictionaries have different translations of the world, of the word. There's a Goyish translation, and then there's a Yiddish translation. He wanted to know what our translation was. So, of course, we gave him our translation. And with our translation, he got a little bit more, let's call it, a deeper understanding of what life is all about. Because there are people who want to be successful in this world, and success is either to be a Chacham, a Gibor, and an Asher. Right? If a person is a Gibor, so he's successful. Chacham is successful. Asher is successful. That may very well be that a Chacham and a Gibor and an Asher are successful people. But what is the definition of a Chacham and a Gibor and an Asher? We also think that such people are successful people, but we have a different translation in what is a Chacham, a Gibor, and an Asher, and therefore, obviously, what comes out is that we have a whole different translation in what's considered successful. You can have a person that makes a very small living, but if he's a Sameach Bechelkai, he's a successful man. And a Gibor, you could have a person that's a weakling, but he's a Kavish Es Yitzchai, he's a successful man. And he's a Chacham, he's a Royas Hanailant, so he's a successful man. And if you're able to figure out how to blow up cities, or all kinds of other kinds of things, the Lav Dafka makes you into a Chacham, not now, but anyway. So, this is a lesson that Alexander was getting from us. I underline another Gemara, some an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says that he asked them, is it better to live on land, or is it better to live on water? where is it better to live? So they told him, Biabeshta Yoi Lemeidar, it's better to live on land. The Hakol Lechusa Yoma Le Misla Daitayu Adasalkin Liabeshta. Because people who go on the ocean, they don't have peace of mind until they get to shore. And it could be that was what he was teaching him. It's very difficult to know what the question was. Where is it better to live? I guess he figured out for him different milas of living in the ocean. Maybe it's safer to live in the ocean, safer from your enemies if you live on a boat all of your days. Maybe because food supply is more plentiful because you can always find fish in the sea. Exactly what it was, the tzad that it's kedai to live in the ocean rather than to live on the land. But whatever it was, whatever the benefits were, but what they told him was peace of mind is found on the Yabosha and is not found on the Yam, and Aibazoi, it's kedai to live on Yabosha. So they were telling him another very important lesson, Benegeya, to what it means to be a successful person in this life. Now, he has some other questions. We want to skip down to the Gemara further on. Also, very interesting, the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amar lahen be'inan de'ezel le'medinas Africa. He wants to go to the land of Africa. Now, I don't know if Africa is Africa or Africa is not Africa. It's very difficult for us to know. However, you see in the Maral, when the Maral talks about this Gemara, so the Maral refers to a Gemara that we have. Actually, it's a Tosis and Avodah Zarah. Tosis and Avodah Zarah, that Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. Over there, the Gemara talks about different Avodah Zarahs, what they look like. One was like a kadur, a ball. And over there, Tosis brings down that there is a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is an Avodah Zarah, Perek Gimel Mishnah Aleph. And the Yerushalmi says like this, that Alexander went on an eagle. He got on the back of an eagle. He flew up into the sky. He flew up into the sky. And he saw that the whole world was made like a kadur. The world is made like a ball. And he also saw that Yam Ukainis, which is, we touch the Atlantic, it means all of the oceans. That was the water of the oceans. Go Misaifa Ayla Matsaifa, from one end of the world to the other. So, and what the Yerushalmi over there explains is that, again, we got to know what this means. I mean, it's difficult to take this Yerushalmi, so to say, its simple face value, because I would assume that if you got onto an eagle and you wanted to fly up in the sky, I don't know if it can carry you. For sure, it can't carry me. Maybe some of you can carry, but it can't carry me. And Alexander, I imagine, was, you know, pretty big man. So as far as this is meant, and then you got to go pretty high up in the air in order to be able to see that the world is round. So, and then why? And if he can do it, so how come only Alexander could do it? So you don't have to be Alexander to do this. I mean, if you can get on the back of an eagle and fly up in the air and see this, so then what do you have to be Alexander to do this? I mean, anybody could do this. So Alexander. So in the Maral, in the Gemara, Tomid episode, it's a little bit mashma that this was more or less descriptive of Alexander, that he went to conquer the world, and he saw that the world was, it's not like the world goes on and on and on. The world doesn't go on and on. The world is round, and the world doesn't go on and on. So therefore, he saw that it's able to conquer the world. So, however, we're going to learn this. By the way, this is very, very interesting, because Shteitachani Yerushalmi, that the world is round, and that the world is surrounded by water. So when Columbus set sail for America, and he was afraid, the people were afraid that he's going to fall off the edge of the world because the world is flat. Mefurisha Tosis, who brings the Mefurisha Yerushalmi, that the world is round, and that the ocean keeps on going. So if you go through the ocean, you're bound to land up with land. So this was common knowledge to us. In other words, that the world was always round. But be it as it may, what we're learning over here is that Alexander had this will, this desire to conquer the world. And that's more or less the way he explains what's going on in this Gemara, that he said that he wants to go down to Medinas Africa. He wants to be able to conquer the world. So they told him, interesting Gemara, the Gemara said, they told him you can't go, because when you go, you're going to have to go through a place that's pitch dark, and you're not going to be able to, even by day, it's pitch dark, and you're not going to be able to see where you're going. So he says, no, he says, but you're understanding, so don't tell me I can't go, I'm going. Just give me the best way to go. So they gave him advice. They told him that he should get a chamor, and this is the way they explain it, they should get a chamor that comes from a place where they live in darkness, and the mela, the chamor, is trained to be able to go in the dark. So this is the best way to go. Yeah, a white chamor, right? Anyway, he took this chamor, and he went marching down into Africa. So now, he marched down into Africa. So the Gemara says, Matalahu mechuzah the kuli nashi. He came down to a city that had only women. A country with only women. Maral says it wasn't only women. It means to say, because you can't have only women, because how are they supposed to have women? What do you do about the next generation? So the Maral says that the Ika were the women. Women were the were in control of this government. They were controlled, they were the Ika. Not like normally the men are, now the women were in control. So he came to this country and the women were in control. So the Gemara says that he wanted to do battle with them. He wanted to go conquer this country. So these women, they went to him and they said that, what are you going to accomplish by fighting with us? If you win, so you'll go down in history as a man that won over women. Big deal. And if you're going to lose, so you're going to go down in history as a person that was conquered by women. Busy angels. So benkach or benkach, there's nothing in this for you. So you shouldn't do battle. So he was, they're right. So here we have this grace Alexander, who's considers himself to be a grace of chacham, and he's ready to do battle with these women. And these women talk him out of it, and they're right. So then the Gemara says he told them, "Give me something to eat." So they said, "Oh, you want? Okay, we'll give you something to eat." So they gave him a rolls made out of gold. Golden rolls. And I'm now on the next Amid. Amalei, he gave him golden rolls. Amalehu, so he said to them, Biachli inshi nahama de dahava, what is this you give me? You give me golden rolls? Whoever heard of anybody who eats golden rolls? So they told him, very good. He says, we kind of figured you didn't come here to eat lunch. You didn't travel down into Africa through all the darkness and everything else to eat a roll. You probably came here to take away our gold, right? So, Ibazoi, we figured that's what you're here for, so that's what we're going to give it to you. So, and once again, he was caught by, outsmarted by these women. So the Gemara says, Kinafik Ba'asi, when he left the city, Kosef Abawa de Mechuza, he wrote on the gates of the city, he wrote like this, Ano Alexandris Mugdom, Yisa Shatya Ad Osis to Medinas Africa, Dinasha, the Yalfis Eitzel Minasha, and he says he came into the, he traveled the way down over here, and the end was, so to say, I was outsmarted by a bunch of women. So, and he wrote it down for posterity, he wrote it down in the city. It was a very, well, you say, a very sobering effect on this Alexander that he got to realize as Nistazah Grace of Chochem. Now the Gemara goes weiter, and the Gemara tells us Mori de Gezach. The Gemara says he sat down to rest, and he took out a roll to eat, and he had fish. Now herring is a traditional food, and the reason that people eat herring is because it's a salted fish, and if you have fish, if you don't refrigerate it, it's going to spoil. So how do you preserve fish? The only way to preserve fish that shouldn't spoil is to put it into briar or into salt. And if you soak it in salt for days and days, so then even if it's not refrigerated, it's not going to spoil. And that is what we call herring. herring, believe it or not, is no such thing as a herring. There is such a fish called a herring, but basically you could make any fish into a herring because you just want to salt it so that it doesn't need refrigeration. So he was traveling and he had with him a fish, a very salted fish, and he sat down to eat his roll together with a piece of fish. He wanted to wash off some of the salt because he's ready to eat it, dipped it into the water, and he smelled that this water was something special, and he said, this is water that comes from Gan Eden. So I don't know, if you sat down next to water and you dipped your fish in and it smelled good, I don't know if your conclusion would be it comes from Gan Eden, right? Probably, I don't know where it comes from, whatever, but so pashtus, you have to, we can't learn this Gemara in a pashut ha'ayfin, right? Something's going on over here, and obviously we don't know what's going on, but something's going on over here. Okay? So the Gemara says that Alexander, this was the thing, that he washed his face in the water. Then the Gemara says that he followed the water until he came to the end, to the Pesach, where it was coming out, and he saw that he came to the door of Gan Eden. Rama Kala, he raised up his voice and he shouted, Pischli Bava. Can you imagine a chitzpah for that mensch? He comes to the gates of Gan Eden and you know, he didn't learn his lesson. The man didn't learn his lesson. You know, he's the boss, right? You know, he's the general and he's the boss. He's even the boss of Gan Eden. So he gets to the door of Gan Eden and he goes pounding on the door. He says, let me in. So they answered him, Habule, Zehashal Hashem, Sadiqim Yelchuba. You know, what do you mean, let you in? Who are you anyway? You know, the Goy, the Oral, the Rusha, we're not going to let you in. Sadiqim came in over here. Amalahain, I know Nami Malkano. So he told him, what do you mean? He says, I'm a king. Mikshva Khashivna. I'm very, very important. So now he still didn't learn his life. He figures good, the command, Sayyid Metals, but he's the king. There has to be something if it's a Hashiva that he should be able to get into Gan Eden because of the fact that he's a king. No, they didn't let him in. So then he asked that they should give him something, and the Gemara says that they gave him Gulglossa, it's a skull. They gave him a skull. And he took the skull and he put the skull on a scale, and on the other side of the scale he put down all the gold that he had, and he saw that the skull outweighed all of the gold that he had. So he asked him, what's going on over here? My high, Amalahun the Rabbonon. So here he goes back again to the Rabbonon. You know, who's going to answer this question for him? You can't go into Aristotle's laboratory to get an answer to this question, because they don't have an answer to this question. The only place to get an answer to this question, you have to go to the Rabbanon, because there's a limit over here. In Alpiderach HaTeva, the skull is lighter than the gold and silver. So he told him that because the eyes of a person are never satisfied, and this has an eye, and the Gemara says they proved it because when they covered up the eyes, so itaka, the gold was heavier. But as long as the eyes are open, then the eyes weigh more than the gold. So this is a lesson that what a person has a lust for, there's no way that you could possibly satisfy it. And this lechera was a lesson for Alexander Mukdam. He goes now to conquer the world, and he probably in his mind thinks, and to a certain degree we all think, right? All I need is one more country, and then I'm okay, right? Like we always think, you know, if I would have another $100, I'd be happy. You know, this is it's an emes, right? And everybody is all Madrega. So Alexander also made the same mistake. So the Chacham told him, you should know that a person, there's no satisfying a person. And you should know, Alexander, that you're from the worst, because you want to go conquer the world. You're even willing to go through the darkness and to Africa and light bizyonis from women. Who knows what else? Abi, you should be able to say that you conquered the world. The Gemara says about Alexander, Geus Odom Tashpi Lena. Alexander goes down in history as the Balgaiva, right? The greatest Balgaiva, Geus Odom Tashpi Lena. The Gaiva of a person brought him down. Tashpi Lena brought him down. How does it bring him down? Because Alexander was all wrapped up in himself, right? And this is the biggest riot. He goes clapping at the door of Gan Eden. He's wrapped up in himself and he believes, he's a very, very strong believer in himself. And he thinks that he himself is able to to know it all, to conquer it all, and he has many, many lessons, sobering lessons that he's taught. But it doesn't do any good. Gayus Adam Tashbileno, and because of this, the Gemara says that he died at a very, very young age. I think he was 33 years old that he died. But in the meantime, we get a look from the Gemara's eyes of what type of a person this Alexander was. And the next time, Mirtz Hashem, we're going to see the contrast. He meets Shimon HaTzadik, and we're going to learn about who Shimon HaTzadik was and what the matzav of Klal Yisrael was.